Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies for a post-lunch pick-me-up. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hello and welcome to the Bechdelcast. My name is Caitlin Durante.
My name is Jamie Loftus.
And we host a podcast about the portrayal of women in movies.
We sure do. I can't really see you.
I know. This is weird. There's a bunch of mics in the way. Here we go. This is better.
Hi.
Hi, Jamie.
Missed you.
So we talk about the representation of women in film and how it's usually bad.
Yes, that's our go-to. We use the Bechdel test as a jumping off point for discussion. Test created by cartoonist Alison Bechdel in the 1980s that features what is it?
Do you want me to say it?
Yeah, I forget.
The Bechdel test requires that a movie, let's say, has two female identifying characters in it with names.
Yes.
They have to speak to each other. And guess what? They should not be talking about men.
Can we test drive it right now?
Please, yes.
Hey, Caitlin.
Hey, Jamie. What's up?
There's something about the movie we're discussing today that I found very distracting.
What is it?
The bone structure of the lead actress was Does it pass the Bechdel test if I'm body shaming a hot woman's face? But I do, like, okay, the main act. Who is even the main actress in this film we're discussing today? Because it looks like her bones were stung by bees. Her cheekbones are so out of her face.
I believe you're talking about the character Claire, played by Emmanuel. I don't know what this last name is.
Anyways, that did pass the Bechdel
test. It did. But again, I don't know why we're judging a woman by her looks or even talking about it.
Her bones did get stung by bees, and I wanted to raise awareness.
Someone get help for Emmanuel Bilt.
Get the bees away from her.
Yeah. Anyway, so usually we don't body shame women on the podcast.
I was doing that to prove that the Bechdel test is actually flawed.
True. Wow, Jamie. Yes.
There was a method to the madness. It's not a perfect system.
No.
Mistakes are made.
Which is why we always have a larger conversation about just the treatment of women in general in the movie. So we are talking about Mission Impossible, and we have a guest here with us, as always.
Yes.
He is a comedian, a writer, and host of the Cracked podcast, Alex Schmidt.
Hey, great to be here.
Hi, thanks for being here.
I'm so glad to be doing this. I got to go back to the 90s by watching the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. I'm feeling really good.
So what is your history with Mission Impossible, the movie, the franchise?
I'm someone who grew up on a lot of James Bond movies.
Mm-hmm.
My grandma worked at our local library, and they had only very specific things on VHS, and one of them was the entire James Bond franchise. Mm. And so I saw all of them when I was really, really young. And then I just needed more movies along those lines, and so I got into the Mission Impossible franchise.
Oh, nice.
I feel like it's kind of a filler placeholder for when you're out of James Bond movies. you can watch Tom Cruise.
It's kind of Diet James Bond.
Yeah.
What if James Bond were American and way shorter? Welcome to Mission Impossible.
And then I feel like when you're out of Mission Impossible movies, you're like, let's see what Jason Bourne is doing. And then out of Jason Bourne, you're like...
Because Matt Damon's not even fun to watch. At least Tom Cruise is fun to watch.
Right. Yeah, well, and Tom Cruise and Matt Damon are both way bigger stars than basically everyone who's played James Bond, except maybe Sean Connery. But like, it's just a much more interesting character somehow, James Bond. Like, I feel like especially Ethan Hunt is so... He's like a robot.
Also, his name's Ethan. I'm just like, I'm only going to sympathize or feel for a character named Ethan to a point. You got to be a really stellar Ethan for me to go the extra mile for you.
Right. Like, you can't have a super secret agent named Brayden. You know, I'm not on board.
Right.
Like, I'm out immediately.
Man, people are going to listen to this podcast in 10 years and be like, what's wrong with Ethan's? Ethan is our president. What if we had a president Ethan? That's what I'm saying. It would be confusing.
Sure. Yes.
I don't know how the Canadians adjusted to a Justin.
Right?
Having a man named Justin in charge just feels like, is he ready? Regardless of how qualified he is, his name's Justin, so is he ready? I don't know. He sounds like he's 14.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Anyway,
so you grew up, would you say, with this
franchise? I'm way into spy movies. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I didn't see this one in theaters because it came out in 96, so it didn't quite line up. But I'm pretty sure I saw the rest of them in theaters and also needed to Google all of them to remember the plots or what happens.
Well, not to brag, but in preparation for this episode...
She went full dummy
I went like deep cover into Mission Impossible.
You were in the mainframe.
I hacked into the mainframe. Now a member of the IMF.
I'm so excited of like how much we get to talk about hacking today. Can I just say... I'm so thrilled. There's so much.
Also, the IMF, I think in real life, is some kind of World Bank sort of thing. It's very distracting every time they say it in the movie.
Yeah.
I think they're going to do loans or something.
I don't remember that actually being the name of their organization in the movies. So my history is that I just rewatched all five of them within the span of 48 hours.
Wow.
Brag. Yeah.
I'm so sorry or proud. I don't know.
Okay. I like this franchise.
It's fun.
I have fun with it. I don't love it. I don't think they're cinematic masterpieces, but especially as they go on, I think they get better. And I enjoy like Ghost Protocol, especially. I liked Rogue
Nation. Ghost Protocol is my son's name.
Really? Because that's my stripper name.
And they both can be president.
Right.
It's true. President Ethan. Go, Ethan, my president.
But I similarly grew up with this franchise. So the first one came out in 96. I was 10, so I don't think I saw it right away. I saw it when I was like 12. If you had asked me at that age what my favorite song was, I would have told you it was the Mission Impossible theme song.
It's a very good theme song. Yeah.
It's great.
It's great.
Like James Bond. It just works.
Yeah. And then I did see Mission Impossible 2 in theaters at a drive-in movie theater.
No way.
In whatever year that was. And if you had asked me that year what my favorite movie was, I would have told you Mission Impossible 2, even though that movie stinks and is bad. But then, and then all the other ones I saw like in theaters, I enjoy them and I'm excited about Fallout coming out. So yeah, I would say I have a certain soft spot for Mission Impossible.
Yeah. And it's like the Fast and Furious franchise where it's gotten better lately too. Like they're on an upswing. So with a new one coming out, I'm stoked.
See, I tapped out at Tokyo Drift, I think. I haven't seen anyone's past.
Tokyo Drift is, was that a joke?
No,
Tokyo Drift is a Fast and the Furious. Oh, we're talking. Wait, I just got so confused.
Impossible Tokyo Drift.
Can I say something about this movie, which is that I don't understand a thing. I felt insane watching this movie because this is a movie for the public. It's not supposed to be like you can't see Mission Impossible unless you have a graduate degree, which, by the way, Caitlin does. Don't know if you know that.
Jamie, you know that I hate to bring it up, so thank you so much for bringing up that I do have a master's degree in screenwriting from Boston University. But
I took the Mensa exam the other day, failed, and it's because I don't understand what happens. I can't make heads or tails of what happens in this fucking movie. And like I was telling you guys in the elevator, like I thought something was happening. And I was like, okay, let me just check Wikipedia to make sure this is what is actually happening. Something totally different was happening that also makes no sense to me. This movie is for intellectuals. I'm literally too stupid to watch this movie. It felt very bad.
No, I don't think that's true. I only barely understand what happens in the movie because I've seen it several times.
It doesn't totally make sense.
But oh. So your history, Jamie, is that you just watched it this morning.
Yeah. I watched it this morning. And I didn't start watching the movie as close to my television as I ended. I kept getting closer because I was just like, maybe it'll make more sense if I get physically closer to this movie. I don't understand what is going on.
Give you the recap, Jamie? And maybe it'll help you understand what happens in this wonderful movie?
Yeah. I think I liked it. I just don't know what happened.
Oh, sure. Well, okay. You're not wrong in finding this movie to be hard to follow
because it's a literal genius.
Mission Impossible is about Ethan Hunt. He is a spy who works for the IMF, which stands for the Impossible Mission Force. Is that it?
I didn't know that's what it stands for, and I've seen all of these.
Yeah, that is what it is. It's something like that. It's definitely Impossible Mission something.
That's,
I think, force.
Bananas.
Yeah.
How do they recruit anybody?
Right. Well, I think it's somehow affiliated with the CIA, but I also don't totally understand that because in the later movies, like, the CIA hates the IMF. So, like, who knows? Please don't at me and tell me. I wish to remain ignorant of this. But anyway, okay. So Ethan Hunt works for this, like, spy organization, and he and his, like, team of people get assigned a mission. And among the team is the hacker. We'll get there. But first it's Jim Phelps, which is John Voight's character, a guy named Jack, which is Emilio Estevez, and then Sarah, Hannah, and Claire. So this is the team that is tasked.
Gender parity on the team.
Equal. Yeah. Down the middle.
It had been a long time since I saw this, and since the very first person I saw was Emilio Estevez, like, for a second I thought, oh, is he the lead of all of these? I forgot.
Yeah.
Did I just super, super forget who is the main character in the movies? Because it's just Emilio Estevez for about a minute, which feels like an eternity.
I glitched a little bit when I saw him, too, because I was like, oh, that would be kind of better. But then you pan up and you see his frosty tips. You're like, oh, he's a hacker.
He's a hacker.
Now I understand. Right. I was let down by the fact that he was not wearing tiny glasses, which is kind of the hacker's uniform. He had the frosty tips. He didn't have the tiny glasses. He did have the black turtleneck. So it's like he was 2/3 of the way there. He went a little rogue by not having tiny reflective glasses.
Well, people go rogue in these movies all the time.
Yeah.
Rogue Nation.
Yeah.
Rogue is one. Oh, I was going to say, isn't that the name of one?
Yeah.
Rogue Ghost.
But then there's a... Ghost Nation? Ghost World. There is another hacker who I thought you were talking about, who we meet later on.
The second hacker.
The second hacker.
Right. That's his character's name.
Yeah.
Hacker Redux.
Okay, so this is the team. We've barely begun the recap.
It doesn't make any sense.
So they are tasked with finding a bad guy who has a list of code names of spies. He has one half of it already, and he needs the other half to, like, actually figure out the identity of the spies. So they're going to basically get evidence that he's trying to steal it and then stop him and figure out who the buyer is and stop him as well. But as they're trying to do this, things start to go wrong and people start to die, and everyone dies, seemingly, except for Ethan. So then he has a run. Go Ethan! President Ethan!
I just want to remind everyone we're rooting for Ethan because it's hard to remember.
So Ethan Hunt is the only one left alive on his team. So he calls, like, his pals at the IMF and he's like, hey, Kittredge, who's a superior of his, he's like, something's happening. And he meets with them, and Kittredge believes him to be a mole. And he's like, this whole thing was set up as a mole hunt, and it looks like you're the mole, Ethan Hunt. And he's like, no, I'm not.
Your last name is Hunt and everything.
Right.
Maybe you're the one we're hunting for. I'm in the CIA. You're like, oh, this guy's smart.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Ethan Hunt runs away because he's like, I'm not the mole, but I have to figure out who is now. So Ethan Hunt learns about this mole who's collaborating with an arms dealer named Max. So he's like, I gotta go find Max and like figure out who the mole is. And there's this whole thing where it's like, the mole is working with Max on this job that they call Job 314. Job, and then it is actually that the mole goes by the name Job, and it's a biblical reference.
Yeah.
And then he's like, okay. And then he
gets distracting from an Arrested Development stance when they start shouting Job all the time. You're like, huh.
And then Ethan Hunt sends an email to Max at Job space 3:14. Yeah. And that works.
Can we talk about the internet in this movie? The internet is the most compelling character in the entire movie. It has the most charisma out of everybody, doing laps around our Tom. The way the internet works. Where there's one point where it says, like, there's a window open that says internet. And then he types in access.
Yeah.
And then it says, like, thinking. I was like, what is this? Is misunderstanding dial-up? Like, what is this?
It's like one of those old text adventures where it's like, you're in a cave, turn left. And then you look to, but somehow it's hacking the internet.
Both hackers talk about the internet in like a way that it's like, oh, whoever wrote this movie was just hoping no one would ask a follow-up question. Because there's the second hacker, I don't know what his name is, because he comes in over an hour into the movie. Very cool thing to do.
Luther.
Just introduce 500 characters, hour 15 in, sure. But the second hacker, Luther, says in the same sentence, he says, like, mainframe, motherboard, hacking, access. And then Tom is like, well, we've got to figure this out. You've got... And I was like, what are you talking about?
I just want you to know that I just sent an email to Max at jobspace3:14. And it did not work. An error message came up right away and said, this address is not recognized.
The CIA wiped them out.
Yeah.
It's clean.
Wow.
Or Scientology got involved. They're like, this was Shelley Miscavige's email, and it's gone now.
Do you guys ever, when I see a Tom Cruise movie, I give him a little bit of credit for just not wedging Scientology into it all the time, even though he doesn't deserve any. You know, every time I see a movie with him and it ends, I'm like, oh, it didn't come up once. How about that?
Yeah.
I'm like a little bit proud.
There's moments where it's like, oh, he could very easily just break the fourth wall and start pitching us. He's got our attention.
Right. I am surprised he doesn't use his platform to like hawk Scientology, but no, he keeps a separation of church and career, I guess. All right, so the rest of the story is, so he is trying to figure out who this mole is named Job 314.
This is where I get very lost.
So he meets with Max, who turns out is a woman. Whoa.
How many times are they gonna do this twist, the androgynous name twist?
Yeah.
Hilarious. Right. Love it.
It's so cool.
Great.
So he meets with Max and he's like, by the way, Max, who's an arms dealer, I'm like an undercover spy and I'm gonna get you that list that you wanted. Pay me a bunch of money and reveal to me who Job is.
Vanessa Redgrave is fabulous in this part.
Yeah.
She's great.
Yeah, she's great.
But he basically just reveals his whole identity to this person. And then he's like, I'll get the thing that you wanted. This, you know, list that will compromise the identity of however many undercover spies.
I think all of them.
All
like
of
every
them.
Every one of them.
Yeah, all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, just give me like $10 million and I'll get you this list. And I just want to know the identity of the mole. And it's like, that's not a good deal. But we accept it because, you know, we don't understand really what's happening.
I also can't hear the plot over the sheer volume of Dutch angles in this movie. You're just like, I can't see, I have no sense of space or time. Oh God. So many. Vanessa Redgrave does not, I'm pretty sure, with the exception of two or three shots, never isn't in a Dutch angle in this entire. Why?
I didn't notice that very much.
This is a movie for dumb people.
there's only geniuses and stupid people will understand this movie and appreciate
it. Us gray area people, there's nothing.
Us like kind of smart people. Okay, so then he compiles this new team of people. Among them is Luther, the new hacker number two. And they plan to infiltrate the CIA and steal this knock list of the list of all the names of the spies. And then they do that. And that this is supposed to be the impossible mission, because how do you get in? There's a voice activation. There's a retinal scan. The room, if it increases temperature, if there's any pressure on the floor.
Hacking.
So all this stuff happens. They get the knock list. Then it's revealed that Jim Phelps, John Voight's character, was the mole all along, and he like set everyone up.
And him not dead at all.
And his wife, Claire, who does come back, I forgot to mention, and helps Ethan Hunt in his impossible mission.
Ethan Hunt gropes her, and then she's like, I'm sad John Voight is dead. And I'm like, why were you dating him? But then
they were married.
They were.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I was just like, I mean, of all the there, you have to suspend your belief a lot in this movie. But the fact that she would date John Voight, who in this movie that is 20 years old is already 500 years old. It's just a lot.
I did, and they introduced that marriage very early on, and that was, it was like an Estevez thing where I was like, okay, so it's a fake marriage, right? Like, it's definitely
she's never even sitting near him.
And then, no, actual marriage. Like, that's real. Everything else is an illusion.
Right, yeah.
The one moment for the Claire character that I was actually very, I was like, oh, this, that was a good acting, beasting. She, when she pretends to find out that John Voight is dead, she goes, Chuck is dead? And I was like, oh, she's so sad. She did love him, even though she never sat near him or spoke to him on screen. So confusing.
So yeah, the end of the story is basically Ethan Hunt confronting John Voight's character and learning that his wife, Claire, was like a double agent and had like crossed him. And then she gets shot dead. And then he has to like prove to Kittredge that he's not the mole. He's like, here, I found the actual mole. There's a whole helicopter thing. There's an explosion. There's a train.
There's the glasses. There's the John Voight mask.
Right.
You're wearing John Voight's face and then you're not, and that's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's an underrated part, because it's they convince Claire to go in a train car, and then Tom Cruise, masked as John Voight, is waiting for her. And then after they speak, real John Voight immediately pops out from a closet, like 2 feet away from Tom Cruise. So for an indeterminate amount of time, real John Voight was just watching fake John Voight from very close quarters.
Why
it's great.
Why would you do that?
And also, why wouldn't Ethan Hunt like sweep the room and make sure his enemy, John Voight, isn't hiding in a closet nearby?
Who made that mask? And how were they able to do it on such a quick turnaround?
Well, the later movies show the mask-making process, and it's really
scary.
Eye-opening.
Wow.
Yeah, this franchise is like obsessive about masks. They're way into
there's
it.
There's always,
and it's the best.
We'll talk about this a little later, but there's certain like recurring things that happen in every Mission Impossible movie.
I'm down for that. I mean, a goofy rubber mask reveal is always very fun. Mm-hmm. It's not as effectively or tastefully done as it is in The Master of Disguise, which is one of my favorite movies, where James Brolin rips off a mask of Bo Derek and the audience stands and cheers.
James Brolin is in that movie?
Yes.
Or Josh Brolin?
No, James Brolin, the old one. He plays Dana Carvey's father. Dana Carvey's 46 in that movie, but his character's supposed to be 23. It's wild.
Oh my gosh.
How dare he? Anyways.
Well, anyway, so that's the story of the first Mission Impossible movie, as far as I can explain it. Let's take a quick break, and we will be back in a moment.
Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at TomboyX.com. Shop now on TomboyX.com.
Hey, Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or artificial nonsense. It's just pure goodness in every pouch. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. That's Symbiotica.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
And we're back.
Hi.
Hello. So Mission Impossible,
Sorry, can I just rip off my John Voight mask really quick?
Please.
It's getting very hot.
John Voight, I thought that was you, but it turns out it was Jamie Loftus.
No, John Voight is actually out on the balcony. He'll come in now and we'll have a confrontation.
Right. As we hinted at during the recap, it seems like there's like a parody within the team. At the beginning of the movie, where it is three men and three women, but once they all die, because they all die within the first like 20 minutes, except for, well, Claire comes back. But basically, two of the three women die, two of the three men die. So we're left with Ethan Hunt and Claire as like kind of the main players in the movie.
And then was President Ethan, was he dating hot lady with the red lip? Was that like a thing, or were they just pretending because of spies?
Do you know what character you're talking about?
Oh, Kristen Scott Thomas?
Yes.
I don't think they were dating. I think there's a very classic spy move of the two of us need to pretend to make out, so there's a reason we're just in this alley watching somebody. I think they were just doing that.
So they were just, okay, because I was like, I don't know how attached we're supposed to be, because then they're just killed. So it starts gender parody, and then becomes the opposite as the movie goes on, which is great.
Pretty much all the new characters who were introduced, aside from Max, is a man.
Yeah.
Because then we meet Kittredge, we meet Luther, we meet Krieger. Because I was like, when I was first watching this, I was like, I didn't super remember it that well. I was like, oh, wow, is there going to be a bunch of women in this movie?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Forgetting that they almost all die right away.
Also, I realized, like, oh, what a gender parody on the team. But then I think they did gender parody so they could kill female characters to, like, create weight. You know, I think that's kind of why it's such a female team, honestly. If it was an all-male team and they all die, it's, like, less feeling, maybe, is probably actor-producer Tom Cruise's opinion, I think. It was pretty rough.
And then he gets to have the moment with Kristen Scott Thomas of, like, you wouldn't have that if that was an all-male team of, like, oh, we get a kiss and we get a... I don't like that they bring all the women and then they're like, okay, well, we're going to murder them, but we're going to bring the model back and she's John Voight's wife.
Yeah.
And you're, oh, geez.
Yeah. Actually, if he and a male agent did the fake-out, make-out in the alley, that would have ruled. That would have been great.
That would have been
like,
great.
If that was their move... Like,
fake out, make
let's make out. Yeah.
Let's start a band called Fake Out, Make Out.
Right. Like, what would he have done if the spy that he had been, like, paired up with was a man? And it just, it feels gross that it's like, oh, well, she's a woman, so what choice do you have but to pretend to make out with her? And it's no. Which is something that happens a lot in these movies where, in this one, the first one specifically, so Claire comes back after Ethan Hunt thinks that she is among all the people who have died on his team. But she comes back, and he's extremely suspicious of her because he thinks maybe she's the mole or maybe the mole sent her. So he, like, pretty violently grabs her, rips off her coat, like, manhandles her, pats her down in a very, like, sexually aggressive way, throws her on the bed, gets on top of her. She's crying. He's like, who sent you? Who sent you? She's like, no, like, this is the rendezvous. We're supposed to, like, meet at 0400, da-da-da. He's screaming at her. His face is, like, inches away from hers. And it's like, take away the context of the scene and just look at the image. And it could easily almost look like a sex scene where he's, like, they're on a bed.
Right.
He's on top of her. So it's making what's very like a very violent and angry moment and sexualizing it very heavily for no reason.
Yeah, it's and also keep in mind he just screamed at her that her husband died.
Right.
He's like, your husband's dead. And then he like kind of attacks her and we're like, what is happening? And then the way that that like bothers me with this genre of movie in particular is that we see this scene and it is aggressive. And then later we find out that she's lying and that she's like a double agent. And so that sort of to an audience member justifies like, well, it's okay that he did that because she was lying. And mm-hmm. blah, blah,
she's
like
a bad guy.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. And then, well, another interesting thing about the Claire character is that because she was married to John Voight's character, we find out that that's what's motivating her to help Ethan, because as far as we know in the beginning, before we find out that he's alive and that he was lying and he's the mole and that she's also like collaborating with the bad guy, her being married to him is what's motivating her to help Ethan, which yes. is like a reversal of a trope that we usually see where it's like, my wife or my daughter.
So his wife.
It's yeah.
His wife.
His wife.
So for Claire, so we're seeing instead my husband, basically.
Right.
My husband.
My husband. Ethan. Which, help me. My husband.
I don't know how interesting that is. It's certainly like a role reversal, but it still feels kind of tropey.
I think it does. And also it ensures that her character, for most of the movie, as far as we know, her motivation is strictly tied to two men.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also sort of implied that she, you know, it's like that she's at the end, John Voight basically speaks on her behalf for a whole scene and is like, she was just seducing you. She doesn't think you're hot, Tom Cruise. I was like, what the? She thinks I'm hot, John Voight. Like, the twist. That's the real twist of the movie. But it was like basically he's saying, and she's, again, one of those my favorite action movie tropes, which is the woman can watch the last scene of the movie, but she cannot participate. So she's fully audience, and sometimes she'll be like, Ethan. But John Voight is just stating what her double agent thing was when she easily could have.
Mm-hmm.
And is also like, I sent her because she had to seduce you. Like, that was clearly what his character saw the value. And then he's, what was that thing he said about, like, I got a taste of it or something disgusting like that.
Yeah, it was some gross thing like
I've tasted the goods. Or...
The goods, yeah. Same, but I've tried the goods myself. And so I was like, oh my God, she's there, you know, right? Like yeah. she could hear
like,
you saying that.
Standing right there.
But then he shoots her like 2 seconds later. Yeah, he's like, my wife, who it seemed like they were on the same page and actually loved each other because they were working side by side.
It didn't make sense that he shot her, right?
Yeah. No.
Or unless he's like, no witnesses.
Right. But even so, like, I don't know. It just, what had been established about their relationship is like totally negated whenever he shoots her for no fucking reason.
Right. His character is confusing to me. Her character is also confusing to me. It sort of is explained at the very end, but we don't know why she's doing that job outside of her loyalty to her husband, really. We don't know anything about her. And then her husband kills her.
Right.
So I have a question about, did she and Tom Cruise hook up? Was that fade to black a suggestion that they hooked up? Or did she just like lick his hand and then he was like, good night?
I
mean, in real life, second thing, for sure. I mean, this also, these movies, the few ways they're different from Bond movies, I feel like between Tom Cruise being the star of all of them and being the producer of all of them, and there's not really a lot of other carryover between them. Like, it's basically mm-hmm. James Bond, but asexual. Not that there's anything wrong with being asexual if you are, but like, there's no, I feel like Tom Cruise as a person in life doesn't know how to deal with women at all. And so it just carries over to the screen. So it's a James Bond movie where James Bond has no interest in women, but is just like doing the beats of it. You know,
it's like, it's a hot woman to be around.
Bond,
but I don't want to kiss.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Bond is like a womanizer, like always. So because I watched all of the Mission Impossible movies
yes.
for RAG, I made a few notes on each one. And I just
oh, great.
Basically some, you know, recurring motifs and whatnot. So for Mission Impossible 2, which came out in 2000, there's basically only one female character in the entire thing, played by Thandie Newton. There's a scene where she and Ethan Hunt are in a bathtub hiding from like a bad guy or something. And he's on top of her and she's like, actually, I like to be on top. So then she like wraps her legs around him and like flips them over so that she's on top of him. She's then straddling him while she's like stealing some jewelry.
Are they wearing clothes?
They are wearing clothes, right. But
there you go.
They're wearing turtlenecks.
She is she is using tools to steal this jewelry that are disguised as a makeup compact and a lipstick. You know, when you're a woman and you're like a thief or a spy, your tools have to be disguised as makeup. Those are the rules.
Right.
Because it reminds me of in this first movie, I feel like the famous thing is stealing the thing in the CIA vault and Tom Cruise floating over the floor.
Yeah.
Totally.
And all three of the guys have very male jobs in it. And then Claire's job is to just squirt stuff into coffee.
That's yes. Right. Yeah. Yeah. She gets the most boring shit to do out of ever. Consistently.
In like a very, and it's also kind of like she has to be like flirtatious because she's sitting next to the guy. They're like on the same side of the table. No one's across from them. It's like a really weird, they're just like sitting side by side.
She like touches.
She's way too close to him. He like looks up. She smiles at him and he's like, oh, a pretty girl smiled at me.
Yeah. And in the script Tom Cruise wrote, sure. The scene was probably like, she uses girl powers to do it. And like, that's it. Like, he doesn't know anything about women. So he's right. Just like, their power is girl stuff. Like, right. That's it.
Note to self, ask Nicole what girls do and put in the script. Sorry.
Oh, wait. So there's a couple. My favorite moment of Mission Impossible 2. Anthony Hopkins is in this one. And he
was Voight busy?
I guess. No, Voight dies at the end of Mission Impossible.
I thought that. Is it bad that I sort of just assumed he would come back? It seems like characters in this franchise can kind of just come back. I'm like, oh, he's probably fine.
Well, I want to talk about that in a second. But so Anthony Hopkins is trying to get Ethan Hunt to recruit Thandie Newton's character to like join their team because of her past relationship to the man that they're trying to get close to. And Ethan Hunt, who is developing a romantic relationship with her for no reason other than they need to see a hot guy and a hot girl kissing on screen, mm-hmm. He says, no, she doesn't have the training for that kind of thing. And Anthony Hopkins says, to go to bed with a man and lie to him? She's a woman. She's got all the training she needs.
It's like, okay, we get it, Anthony Hopkins. You've cool. been dumped. Jeez. Stop projecting. Honey.
He just clearly keeps talking about one ex. Like, who's Beth? I don't know.
Oh, really, really quick. The use of gadgets in Mission Impossible is great. The gum, impractical. Yeah. If you sat on that gum, you would blow up. It doesn't make any. I was like, what if Tom Cruise, God forbid, put that gum in his back pocket? He would explode. And then the glasses flip. Sorry. Yeah. Anyways, Emilio did a great job. Also, Emilio in this movie, and I double checked to make sure this is true, for some reason elects to go uncredited in this movie. His name is not in the credits. He's uncredited. Why? He's in it more than a lot of people.
Yeah, he has quite a few lines.
Yeah, he's like really in it. Yeah, it's not just a cameo.
He's uncredited.
His death is so gruesome, by the way. He gets like a elevator spike to the face.
It's like Final Destination. It's horrible.
So talking about your point of like recurring characters, Jamie, of all the movies in the franchise, it's always the same leading man of Tom Cruise playing Ethan Hunt. And there's quite a few recurring side characters who are, except for one example, all men, because you have Simon Pegg's character who comes. I think he's introduced in the third movie, and then he's in, I think, all the other ones after that.
Yeah.
Luther is in, I think, every movie or every single movie but one. Yeah. Luther
comes back.
He's always hacking. Yeah. Jeremy Renner's character gets introduced later on, and he's in a couple of the movies. So it's several men, and then there is one character who, I think in the third movie, Ethan Hunt gets married.
To
what's her name?
Michelle Monaghan, right? I don't know if that's how it's pronounced. Yeah.
And then she shows up again in another movie, but only for like a split second. So it's really any of the notable characters who are recurring are all men. And of the women who, so in the movies, there's usually one main woman. They're not really romantic lead because, yeah, he is often like kind of asexual.
The asexual Bond girls?
Well, yeah. They are. So it's not asexual because they are usually sexualized in some way. And there is often like a moment where they either have like a flirtation or some sort of sexual tension. But there's like a female lead. She changes every single time in the movie. There's no recurring female leads. Usually, as the movies go on, they stay the same age, but all the other, like, you know, Tom Cruise and everyone gets older.
Well, so, we don't. Tom Cruise could be drinking the blood of young people and could very well be immortal.
Sure. We've all seen Interview with a Vampire, so that tracks.
True.
There being no recurring women in the movie, I feel like sends a message to everyone who's seeing this, especially the men, that it's, like, cool to be a playboy, and it's cool to have, like, a bunch of different women. And whenever you get bored with one, you can just, like, dump her and move on to the next. I feel like the Bond franchise is much more guilty of this than Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
But it's still implying that, like, women can be replaced, that they're basically just, like, objects that you can cast aside and recast in a new movie.
I want to see a movie about the island where Tom Cruise sends women when they turn 30. I wanted to see a movie about all of Tom Cruise's former co-stars who he shipped off to an island on their 30th birthday. Yeah, because that is such a trope of this genre and of, I mean, but it really spans all genres where rom-coms are often very guilty of this. You know, and historically, male entertainers tend to get more opportunities to do things later into their lives and are also just given, I mean, even John Voight's character in the first movie, the massive age gap between him and his wife.
Yeah.
Not to shame anyone who has a May-December romance, but this is fucking ridiculous. Like, it's crazy.
It's pretty much often the only representation we see of, like, a hetero romantic relationship where it's a much older man. It's like, if there is a movie with an older man as the lead, it's very rare to see his romantic partner be his contemporary.
Yeah.
She's almost always, like, 15, 20, 25 years younger than him.
And it's interesting because I think that these tropes in this movie in particular are kind of like, it's very clear to see them because there is this whole kind of sexless vibe to this movie where you see these tropes and it's like they've plugged in all the, like, young woman dates old man, hot woman interested in the lead, but it's presented in such a non-sexual way for the male lead that it's almost just like this weird roadmap of, like, oh yeah, this is how all action movies are, regardless of whether it makes sense for the plot or the characters.
Right.
Yeah.
Because in James Bond movies, it's so knocking you over the head. It's so sexual. But this one, it's like almost like there's like a little bit of an uncanny quality to the way women are treated because it doesn't make sense in such a non-sexual movie for women to be presented this way.
Right.
But it's just like, well, this is what we do in these movies.
And it's just, again, it's very bizarre to me that he works in every of the movies. There's a spy who's a woman who he works with and who proves herself to be very competent. And yet, why don't we ever see her again? Sometimes she dies in the movie. Mm. But if she doesn't, it would stand to reason because other of the, like, male characters who are recurring, like Luther and Simon Pegg's character and Jeremy Renner's character, like, they come back. Why don't any of the women get to?
Right.
And this also got me thinking that, so even in this first movie that came out in 1996, a few of the main men are Tom Cruise, Emilio Estevez, John Voight. Three, like, famous, recognizable dudes who are still, even, like, over 20 years later, still famous, still recognizable. The women, whose characters' names are Sarah, Hannah, and Claire, I, off the top of my head, don't know those actresses' names, even though I just said one, Emmanuel. Like, I don't know her. They might be sort of familiar faces, but I don't recognize them by name, certainly. And it got me on this, like, train of thought where I wonder if lesser known women get cast in these parts opposite men because it's like, are they worried the women, like, a more famous woman is going to upstage the man? You know what I mean?
Oh, wow.
Like,
maybe.
But that varies from franchise to franchise
for sure.
as well.
But in but this one especially, saying. Like in the later movies, the woman who gets cast opposite Tom Cruise is usually familiar, but not like a household name. Mm-hmm. Like in maybe it's like, oh, well, they're giving like an up and coming actress her chance. Is it bad to say actress? I feel like it's just actor. An actor who's a woman, her chance. But I also wonder if it's like, well, like Tom Cruise doesn't want to be upstaged by like a woman just as famous as him. I don't know. This might be all pure speculation, but I think this is true of, and it does vary from franchise to franchise, but I think this is actually pretty common for like action franchises like this.
I think that this rule definitely applies to Transformers. That's the franchise that came to my mind where Megan Fox became such a big name off of that movie. Mm-hmm. And then she kind of got like blackballed from that franchise because she was kind of like too big and was asking to be treated fairly. And they're like, oh no, we'll just get someone else.
Yeah.
Instead of treating you fairly and like your work has impact on this franchise, we will literally just recast you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think with a lot of these franchises too, you can just see those Hollywood machine parts. Hearts moving of, oh, we just need a new lady, new lady. And then Mission Impossible, it's sort of extra weird because I think it's also just partly driven with Tom Cruise, the person, being like, he's probably bad at hanging out with women or like being around them. Like, he clearly wants the exact same dudes on set every time around. Like, this new one, I think, is the first repeat director, but it's only been male directors. Mm-hmm. It's the same guys on the crew all the time. He just wants Alec Baldwin and Ving Rhames back all the time. But constantly new women all the time, just everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Tom Cruise, I mean, and we just don't have time to unpack Tom Cruise today. But there's
when will there be time?
You know, there's so many levels of fuckery to the career of Tom Cruise and Tom Cruise as he pertains to women. Shouts out to Katie and Nicole. Boy, they have to deal with some shit.
Yeah.
Really bad. You can read up on it if you want. But yeah, I mean, I would imagine, I'm just shot in the dark here, Tom Cruise probably does not want an actress who is his equal experience-wise on screen with him because it seems like he has a pathological fear of being upstaged.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be another thing, I guess. I will say I didn't know that Emmanuel Béart is within a year of the same age as Tom Cruise.
Sure, in this movie, when he is young.
She is an age-appropriate person for him in this movie. She is not age-appropriate for John Voight, who, as I said, was born in 1896, if you can believe. John Voight was born in 1896. That's so crazy that he's still working.
Yeah. Sure, it makes, like, yeah, she is age-appropriate in this movie,
yes.
But 22 years later when this franchise is still going on and the
Absolutely
women who are, you know, cast opposite him are still, you know, 30. So let's take a quick break and we will be back shortly.
Woo.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or artificial nonsense. It's just pure goodness in every pouch. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. That's Symbiotica.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
And we're back. Another thing I wanted to talk about, and Alex, you touched on this, is like that very iconic scene where Tom Cruise is like dangling on the rope, like suspended kind of in midair when he's like trying to steal the knock list. That scene has been like spoofed, parodied, alluded to in like bazillions of things in pop culture.
Yeah.
One of them being Paddington. But that's neither here nor there. But please go check out the movie Paddington and Paddington 2 if you haven't. Anyway, so it got me thinking about very famous and iconic movie scenes like this. I made a list, which will take probably too long to go through, but there's like super cuts on YouTube of like, you know, iconic movie scenes or like famous movie quotes. And you'll find that almost all of them involve men. Not a woman to be seen.
Shut up.
I know.
And if there is a woman to be seen, it is usually in like a very romantic hetero context.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're thinking like...
You had me at hello.
Right. She's declaring her love for a man. She's sometimes, if she's in a Harrison Ford movie, chances are she's being grabbed by Harrison Ford and kissed forcibly. God, I hate Harrison Ford.
Everyone's dream.
Oh, God. Push him out a window. But I do. I
believe it about the iconic scenes. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So that's unfortunate.
Fortunately, I think we at least in the past 10 years have more female action heroes to choose from, mm-hmm. which is great. But it's still, yeah. In terms of the history of cinema, it's really just straight ladies kissing straight dudes, and sometimes they get a line.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes, if they're lucky.
And sometimes you get Scarlett O'Hara shaking her fist at the sky, and you're like, oh, that's exciting. But wait, she's a slave owner, so that's not good either.
Mm.
So movies are bad.
Movies are not good. Oh, just a couple. So going back to some of the other sequels, a few things I wanted to mention or just trends that I found is that there's almost always a scene where Ethan Hunt does something to a female character that is not a sexual act, like hiding from a bad guy or like searching them because he thinks they're suspicious. But the movie always frames it as something very sexual because he isn't usually ever given a romantic interest in the movies. So like, you know, whatever director, producer, writer is like, well, we still have to have, you know, Tom Cruise fondling a woman on screen or who's going to want to see this?
Right. He's like, I have to prove that I am a man who likes girls. Girls, and everyone needs to see.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't... His vibe is so creepy, and not just this movie, like Top Gun, a lot of things from this era in particular. The way he deals with women is, like, very intense to me. Like, it just seems really creepy. And watching this movie, I started developing a fan theory that he's just, like, two teenagers in a long coat or something, and he, like, doesn't know what to do, so he's doing bad things.
He's 5'4". He's one teenager in a coat.
And it is wild how just, like, such intense, insecure masculine energy is broadcast to the largest possible audience. It is fascinating. Sociologically, Tom Cruise's career is fascinating because you're like, he's so insecure about whatever, who knows, he won't tell us. But we all have to all have to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it.
And he's always running. Have you seen the so supercut of him running?
No.
There is an 18-minute long video just of someone took all the scenes in every movie he's ever been in of him running. It's 18 sprinting. Minutes long.
Oh, my God.
It's so actually long. Amazing.
Wow. There's 5 minutes of Tom Cruise running in 2018 alone.
Wow. Yeah.
Wild.
Yeah, you can watch like one of those Christmas log videos. Like, it's just the same thing endlessly. It's kind of calming after
throw
a while.
Throw it on at a party.
Yeah. It's great, yeah.
A few of the other trends I noticed is that there's often violence against both men and women in these movies. But often when a woman is killed, it's because she's been like captured and tied up and, you know, murdered in cold blood kind of thing. Whereas when men die, it's usually because they're like in combat and they're like fighting for themselves. There are a few exceptions where there's different agents who are like kicking ass and fighting. In fact, there's one scene, and I think it's either Ghost Protocol or Rogue Nation, but there's a woman who's, like, fighting a room full of bad guys, and, like, Tom Cruise is tied up, so, like, he can't help right away, so it's, like, her, like, kicking ass.
Wow, he's Mary Jane'd?
Yeah.
Wow.
And she has to, like, save him and help him. So every once in a while, there will be, like, a role reversal like that, but for the most part, in these movies, women are sexualized in some way very needlessly. They are often damseled. There are a few, you know, characters who come and go who are like, oh, yeah, she's pretty cool. She's a badass. But she, of course, isn't given a personality or anything like that.
Right.
But so, yeah, the treatment over the span of this franchise of women is peculiar.
Yeah.
Because some... you know, action franchises, the women will just be damseled and she can't fight for herself. She can't do anything. She's given no skills, no personality, anything like that. In these movies, at least there are like women agents who are like fighting and like doing cool stuff. And some of them are hacking even, and some of them are like, you know, doing this and that. But
in the first movie, at least, it seems like Tom Cruise and John Voight respect the women they're working with, don't call their qualifications into question, mm-hmm. which is a low bar to set.
Right.
But in most movies like this, you know, you'd have that moment of like, can she really do her job and be so very hot? And then she has to prove it. There aren't those proving moments in this in the first movie, at least, but it's still, it's like they treat women like neutral to light negative. Mm-hmm. And I think do what a lot of these movies do and what the vast majority of movies do, which is kind of just like forget about its female characters for large swaths of the movie and then go back to them when they need something sexy to happen.
Right.
But there's not really any character motivated reasons that we ever cut to Claire. It always has to be like, oh, a sexy thing needs to happen, or John Voight is going to enter the room soon. Like, those are mostly her cues. And so it's just like, I mean, God, I can't believe that Tom Cruise can't write a female character. I can't believe it.
I mean, is he writing these at all?
Is he?
I'm sure he's probably like, I need my character to do this move, this thing in this movie. But like,
The fifth one and the upcoming sixth one, the director is his like previous script doctor on these. It's this guy, Christopher McQuarrie. So okay. I think he does the Will Smith thing where he has a script guy that he puts in. So he's not like writing it, but he's telling someone what to type kind of
right.
thing.
All this said, this is a fun movie that does not treat women. It doesn't treat women well. It doesn't really treat women at all. Mm-hmm. It is a very non-sexual action movie, which is unusual.
Yeah.
Because I feel like action movies so often tip into outright misogyny. This one doesn't, because it just isn't. It's like this movie doesn't know how to talk to girls. Like literally, this as a text does not know how to talk to girls and largely doesn't.
Yeah, it's in like the corner of a middle school dance. It's just like, what do I do?
Yeah.
Like, all the time.
I worked so hard on my outfit, but I don't know how to talk to anybody. But that said, because it just is like kind of awkward in the way it treats its characters a lot of the time, I still was able to enjoy it. I don't know. Like, I was like, this movie makes no sense. You have to be a literal genius to understand what's going on here. You
That's
have to
not
be able to hack
true.
Into the mainframe.
The story is not well written. And a lot, like, why would a arms dealer want a knock list of spies? Like, doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
I kept Googling her job to figure out why she would need it at all.
Right.
Like, is she an arms dealer and a list dealer? Like, she's just going to flip it or something? I don't get it.
And then
she's
why
gonna
would...
side hustle.
Why would Ethan Hunt, whose job is a spy, and a huge part of being a spy is to not let other people know that you're a spy. Why
he
would
loves
he
telling people
tell
he's a spy.
Max that he's a spy.
That is it. That's then, a like, classic Bond move too. He just like goes into a casino and they're like, you need to do some detective work here. And he just walks up to people and he's like, I'm James Bond. Where's the villain? It's great. It's really fun. Yeah.
You're like, oh, sure. Okay. I guess we're just going full dummy on this. Great.
So it's not that you need to be a genius to understand this movie. It's that this story, I would argue, is not clear or that well written.
But the John Voight mask rip really does make it worth the time.
The mask reveals, especially as the franchise goes on, are very fun.
Because
you're
it.
Like, this person that I thought was Philip Seymour Hoffman is actually someone else.
Oh my God! Ethan, you got me again! I wish every time that happened, someone went, Ethan, come on! You're so crazy! Where do you get these masks?
If someone photoshops Mission in Parmesan, do it, please. Send it to us now.
I feel like you've been holding that in for an hour.
Just the 5 seconds I thought of it and then said it was real hard. Let's go and get them.
Oh, boy. Does anyone have any other thoughts about the movie? Oh, real quick, I actually wanted to talk about the character of Max, who, so before we meet Max on screen, Max is talked about a lot, and the pronouns that are used are he, because everyone assumes that Max, the arm dealer, is a he. And then there's a big reveal that whenever we meet Max on screen, it's actually a woman, which we've covered here and there on the podcast before, where it's, I don't know how commonly recurring this trope is, but it's definitely a trope where, you know, a character who you thought was a man, surprise, either they take off their mask or they,
exhausting.
You know, take off their helmet or whatever, or, you know, we just meet them and it's actually a woman. It bothers me that, like, someone's gender is, like, used as a big surprising reveal. But it also might be like providing commentary on how gender normative everyone is, where it's like, oh, this person who's an arms dealer, or, you know, driving a motorcycle, or a doctor who you think might be a man. Just kidding. A woman can be those things too.
Yeah, it's a shitty reveal and it's recycled over and over and over. I feel like most commonly in a movie like this, but sometimes it kind of crosses genres as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. I don't know how much there is to talk about her character aside from that, because she's just sort of there being a plot device, essentially. She's pretty much given no characterization. And also what she does want makes no sense, because, again, she's an arms dealer. I don't understand what her situation is.
She's just like, I think it's one of those situations that it's not quite Walken and Gigli, but sorry, that's a really highbrow reference to Christopher Walken's one scene in Gigli. It's not quite Walken and Gigli, where it truly appears that the actor in question was told they would be given an amount of money to wander on set and just hold a cup and be like, here are some words off the top of my head. But there is a quality to Vanessa Redgrave's part where it's like she's sort of just acting like herself, or like kind of a caricature of herself, of like a very posh, like smart woman who isn't going to tell you everything. You know, like her character doesn't make a ton of sense. I am glad she's there. I love her. I love her. Her scenes with Tom Cruise are weirdly, I think it's because they're so non-sexual. That's why they're compelling. I'm just like, how does Tom Cruise view this woman? Does he think of her? How does he? It's very unclear.
I think a more interesting movie than this one would have been an exploration of an arms dealer who's a woman and what that life is like. Like, is she taken seriously by her buyers and other male arms dealers? Let's explore that.
Let's unpack it.
Yeah, because we never see her like knock anybody's heads together or anything. So clearly she did a lot of that before. And that would have been really exciting to see.
Right.
Oh, man. You know, like nobody gets to that position without enforcing first, you know?
Yeah,
where's the origin story?
Let's...
I like it. Yeah, I mean, but that's a, none of the characters here are well written or really make any sense.
Yeah.
So.
And that's why it's a good movie.
That's why I love it.
Dang.
I mean, it's just a weird movie. It's just a weird movie. Tom Cruise is a weird man. He's got terrific teeth.
Tom Cruise is problematic as hell, but
yes.
I honestly quite enjoy him, and I like a lot of his movies.
He is an actor who leads with his teeth, which is wild. Like, if you watch Tom Cruise act, his teeth somehow are first. Like, you know, like some people lead with their hips.
Sure.
Some people lead with their... But Tom, he's just like going into every role tooth first.
Chances are Tom Cruise is running toward you or running somewhere. Teeth first.
Teeth shining. I think he just has one gigantic tooth and then draws in the lines every morning. He's a complicated man.
Look, this movie, the first Mission Impossible movie, is not that great. I have never seen any of the TV shows, so I don't really, familiar with the source material.
My understanding
is
that it's kind of goofy.
Yeah, I'm sure it's like campy 60s, like super camp kind of thing. But as the movies go on, they get better and better. I think Ghost Protocol might be my favorite. I liked 3 enough to buy it on DVD. Mission Impossible 2 is objectively a bad movie, but the rest are like pretty decent. And I think easier to understand. So like, I think the first one and the first two are just like, what the fuck is happening in this movie?
Ethan.
Yeah. Ethan.
Cut it out.
But I think they get better as they go on. But yeah, so this is a franchise I enjoy when I'm not looking at it through the Bechdel cast lens. But when I am doing that, you know, it's not hard to see that this franchise does not treat women especially well. There are certainly franchises that do a much worse job.
Yeah.
There are some that maybe do a better job. But an action franchise, you'd be hard-pressed to find one that, like, is a feminist masterpiece, because I can't think of any off the top of my head that are.
Well, there's Alien.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, there are like good female action heroes, some of whom we've covered on this very podcast. But as far as this particular formula goes, where it's like a male action lead, which is 90% of them, I'd be interested if any of our listeners could come to us with a male action-led franchise that has female characters that are treated well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because certainly, like, as we discussed already, Bond does not do a good job.
Real bad.
Indiana Jones does not do a good job.
Real bad.
Yeah, so, yeah, action franchises have a long history of not treating women well.
Woo.
Speaking of, does this movie pass the Bechdel test?
No.
Not even close.
No. Women don't even make eye contact in this movie. It's crazy.
And it really, and like, I wrote down, I was like, this scene where they're all prepepping, this scene where they are prepepping the scheme is like the 7-minute mark. I was like, they are going to have women talk to each other. We're going to get it. And then they don't. And then there's never even two women in the same room again.
Right.
Like,
they really tease you at the top.
Yeah.
With like, they don't even look at each other. I went back and rewatched the scene partially to check out Emilio's tips, but mostly to see if women even look. They don't even look at each other. There's no acknowledgement. It's mostly Tom Cruise being like, can we get a cappuccino machine in here? My name is Ethan, and I want a better coffee than I have. And then John Voight's like, yeah, my wife made that coffee. And then she's like, I made that coffee. End of scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if people haven't seen this movie in a while, it's like Tom Cruise trying to do what he thinks adults do at work when they joke around.
Yeah.
It is really, really weird. Or grown up. It's really weird. Like, he like flipped through some Dilbert and was like, this is probably it. I don't know.
They talk about cappuccino, a boss, a room.
Good enough for me. My name is Ethan.
So let us rate the movie on our nipple scale, where we rate the movie based on its portrayal of women, 0 to 5 nipples. I'm going to have to give this one, I think, like a 1. And maybe that's even being too generous. Like, I had such high hopes starting out, because I was like, oh, 3 of the 6 people on this team of spies are women. Like, this is going to be dope. And then they pretty much all instantly get murdered. So it's not the feminist text that we were all hoping for. The women who do survive and don't get murdered, yeah, their motivations are not totally clear, or they are attached to a man. They aren't really given much cool to do on screen. Like, we already talked about Claire, like, when they're like going in to steal the knock list, she just has to like look cute in a red dress and poison a guy. And that's like pretty much all she gets to do. And other than that, yeah, she's either like groped by Tom Cruise or screamed at, or she gets shot by her husband. So
that still makes no sense that would happen.
And then with Max, like, I don't understand why she's in the movie or why an arms dealer would want this list and why it's just none of that makes any sense to me. So yeah, the women who are in the movie pretty much don't make a whole lot of sense. And overall, the movie just does not treat women well. The franchise does not treat women especially well. We are not surprised by that, but maybe Mission Impossible Fallout will do a better job.
Yeah, I wonder how the Mission Impossible franchise is going to tackle the Me Too movement. That's really the text we're waiting for.
Yeah. Good also, as we often come across, this is an extremely white movie, you know, very hetero, everything like that. In fact, I had to watch the first scene when they're introducing all the members of the team. I had to watch that like three times because I was like, okay, wait, which woman is Sarah and which one is Claire and which one is Hannah? Because they're all three white women who look very similar.
They all have the same hairstyle. Who gave them all the same hairstyle?
I had no idea who was who.
Yeah.
And until two of them died and I was like, okay, this one's named Claire and she's still alive. And okay, like, I don't know, maybe put some diversity in your movies and you wouldn't have to tell so many fucking white people apart. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, let's go down to a half nipple. And the half nipple I will give to Max because I like that actor.
I guess I'm going to give it one. And this is almost an unfair yardstick to be using, but put against comparable series, it does not abuse women.
That's true.
To the same extent that most franchises in this genre that are equally successful.
But that's such a low bar.
but I think that that is worth noting as it pertains to this movie, because it does make a difference in the way you view the movie. That said, this movie just like doesn't know how to talk to girls. The groping is absolutely unnecessary. The way that character is spoken for while she's in the room and then killed in the last scene is like borderline ridiculous because it doesn't make sense. So not only is it not based in reality from a gendered standpoint, it is also very bleak. Mm-hmm. I think of the few merits this movie has, it's nice to at least see female characters in an action series whose skills aren't constantly called into question. Mm-hmm. I think part of the reason that is, though, is because they're not given that much to do, and or they are all killed at the beginning of the movie, which again, yeah, that first scene is just like so frustrating because it's like, oh, we've got almost a movie here. And then I think, Alex, you're totally on the right track with being like, well, there's gender parity at the beginning, so you can see a lot of women die and have emotional stakes attached to that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's weird. Like this, there's just like a weird uncanny valley quality to the way this movie deals with gender, because I don't think it knows how, because Tom Cruise is involved. So I'll give it, you know, I'll give it one nipple for the women that are there. None of the characters make sense, but the female characters in this movie don't make sense and don't have any existence outside of the male characters that also make no sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give one nipple, and I'll give it to Alfred Molina because I think that he really could have shown up in this movie in almost any part in an effective way. I would love not to, you know, but if Emilio really didn't want to be credited in this movie, Freddie would have taken the credit. He would have taken the credit. He would have hacked the mainframe. We don't get to see thick hackers a lot, and that would have been an interesting move. So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
So Alfred gets mine.
I would watch a franchise called Thick Hackers.
Thick Hackers?
Are you kidding me?
It's like kind of my type. Yeah.
That was great. I mean, you both nailed it. I would give it, I think, one whole nipple because, yeah, it doesn't go as overboard with brutality toward women as a lot of action movies. Like we said, incredibly low bar, but also it does a lot of things wrong too. And especially, like, this was the least I've ever liked at watching it because I was thinking, oh, this was maybe much more feminist than I remembered. And then it super isn't all of a sudden. Like it's just a sudden hard left turn. Yeah, I think if Tom Cruise could have gone and like just been on an island by himself and made whatever movie he'd want to make, it would be this movie with absolutely no women in it. Like, there are only women in the film because he knows that's, like, a consideration that the rest of human civilization and the species wants, and otherwise it would just be boys hanging out, and that would be the entire thing.
Can't wait for that franchise.
Yeah,
we could rename maybe 80% of movie franchises to Boys Hanging Out. But there were sometimes boys hanging out with guns.
Ooh, yeah. Well, Alex, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, yay. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
Yeah.
Where can people follow you online? Do you have anything you'd like to plug?
Yeah, my Twitter account is at Alex Schmitty. It's my name with a Y on the end. And then my website is alexschmitty.com, and that has show dates and other info and more.
Awesome.
Yeah, and the Cracked podcast. Please listen.
It's the best.
Yay.
Oh.
We're fans.
You can follow the Bechdelcast on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook at Bechdelcast. You can subscribe to our Patreon. It's $5 a month, and it gets you 2 bonus episodes every single month. Check out our website, Bechdelcast.com. You can buy merchandise from our online store there.
Yeah.
And you can follow me at Caitlin Durante on Twitter and Instagram.
You can follow me at Jamie Loftus Help on Twitter and Jamie Christ Superstar on Instagram, because I don't play by the rules.
That's right.
I'm
your
ghost
rogue
protocol.
Rogue Nation.
I'm a rogue ghost. I'm a thick hacker.
This episode will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
Hee-hee.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
This is Amy Brown from 4 Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.